Costner versus Grand Junction Pipe.
Thank you, Your Honor. Can I please the court? My name is Paul Gertz. I represent the plaintiff, appellant Deborah Costner. As the court well knows, our jury verdict in Colorado is entitled to great deference. It is only to be set aside in unusual circumstances in which a jury clearly has failed to follow the court's instructions and disregarded the evidence in the case. We believe that this is one of those cases in which the jury did in fact disregard the court's instructions and failed to follow the evidence. I'd like to address 3 points with the court. First is the proper standard for the court to evaluate whether or not the jury's findings of zero, no damages, can be upheld on this appeal or whether they should be set aside. The second is the mitigation of damages defense that the defendants raised during trial and are arguing on this appeal. And third is the illogical findings of the jury awarding $16,000 for physical impairment while finding zero damages for economic damages as well as non-economic damages. On the first point, I think that defense and I agree upon what the applicable law is. We agree that if the evidence is disputed and there is a question about whether the plaintiff was indeed hurt or whether the injuries were de minimis, the Lee's Mobile Wash case applies. And in that situation, the Court of Appeals has no authority and the trial court has no authority to set aside the verdict of the jury. On the other hand, if it is undisputed that the plaintiff was indeed hurt in the accident and that the injuries are more than de minimis, then the Martinez versus Shepherd case and that line of cases under that decision apply. The briefs here argue both those same sets of cases and just to put a different spin on how they apply to the facts of this case. At trial, plaintiff and defendant both agreed that the plaintiff had suffered physical injuries as a result of this accident. There was no dispute about that from the beginning of the case to the very end of it. There was a big dispute, as the court knows, about whether or not plaintiff suffered a traumatic brain injury. We lost on that point. It's obvious from the verdict of the jury that the jury did not accept our testimony concerning this lady sustaining a traumatic brain injury. It's also obvious from the jury's verdict that the jury must have concluded that the medical expenses we were claiming were excessive, and they perhaps even believed that the plaintiff was exaggerating the extent of her symptoms and her problems. There's nothing we can do about that part of the jury's findings or the verdict. However, we do complain about, and we do think it is wrong, that the jury awarded nothing in a situation in which the plaintiff was clearly hurt, and it was undisputed by all parties that she was hurt, and even undisputed that she suffered pain and suffering, and that she had an entitlement to reasonable medical expenses as a result of this accident. The injuries and the need for medical care and medical treatment were proven by more than a preponderance of the evidence. It was proven by her, by the
plaintiff. How much medical treatment and medical care was in fact incurred? I understand that there was about $118,000 in chiropractic expenses that were incurred and some therapy expenses apparently by a treatment professional who happened to be the wife of the chiropractor. But there's a lot of evidence, if I recall correctly, that her physicians recommended all kinds of courses of treatment, referred her to other physicians who would provide it, and she failed to follow up on the medical side of the treatment. So what medical eliminating the chiropractic is a separate, that may be healthcare expense, but how much medical expenses were incurred?
Well, she was treated at the scene of the accident by the EMS people. The jury gave zero for that. Even the defense expert, Dr. Chang, conceded that 4 to 5 weeks of chiropractic care was appropriate. They gave zero for that. The doctors talked about physical therapy. She didn't have any physical therapy bills, as I remember. She did go to a dentist, and the defense expert conceded that she did have TMJ-like symptoms. She incurred those expenses, and the jury gave zero for that. She had vision problems, which was undisputed. Even their expert agreed that there were vision disturbances, which he called post-traumatic vision syndrome. And she went to an ophthalmologist for that and received treatment and even special glasses that she received as a result of that. Your Honor is correct that the vast majority of the medical expenses were for chiropractic care, and it's obvious the jury felt like those were excessive and unnecessary, and that may have been the explanation for the zero jury award for economic damages. But there is no question in the record that she did incur certain recoverable expenses, and that even their expert agreed that certain future medical expenses were needed. For example, for the shoulder injury that she had, there was an MRI charge, and she needed physical therapy for that. So there were, Your Honor, a number of different
items. What was her total medical bills for the things that you're saying that she received?
The eye care, the dental care. Probably in the range of
$7,500 to $10,000.
And Your Honor, I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number with me, but something in that range, not de minimis by any means.
Did the jury not reduce any recovery the way they apparently did here on the basis that her failure to pursue the medical treatment recommended was a failure to mitigate and in effect should disqualify her from receiving damages?
Yes, sir. That's apparently what the jury did in this case, and we think the jury was wrong in that regard. If they did that, we believe they misapplied the mitigation damages defense. As we argue in our brief, Your Honor, the mitigation damages defense is designed to minimize the damages to only those damages that were reasonable and necessary, those expenses which were reasonable and necessary. That would mean, for example, if our total expenses here were $125,000 and $110,000 of that was the chiropractic care that went on beyond the 4 to 5 weeks, the jury would be entitled to knock out that large chunk there, $110,000, but that would still leave the difference there, which theoretically should be the amount that's actually and necessarily and reasonably incurred as a result of the accident. The jury was not entitled to wipe away all the damages in this case, all the expenses, claiming that they were failure to mitigate justifies that, because even their own experts agree that there was reasonable and necessary medical expenses incurred in the past as well as in the future that she needed treatment for those things.
The jury wasn't required to follow even the expert opinion, were they?
No, sir, that's correct. They could ignore one or more of the experts, they could ignore one or more of the witnesses in the case, but at some point, Your Honor, if as defense counsel admitted during his closing argument, everybody in the room knew that she was hurt, at some point they go too far. They can't ignore the plaintiff's testimony, our doctor's testimony, the defense doctor's testimony, the concessions and admissions of defense counsel. They can't ignore all the evidence and conclude that the lady had zero economic damages and zero for pain and suffering.
You mentioned just a moment ago, and it's in the briefs, that she spent her allocation of treatment funds, and you said she had 118, she had some limited number of weeks. Some number of weeks of benefit. What was paying these bills?
Your Honor, nobody was paying the chiropractor. The chiropractor has still not been paid. I didn't have anything to do with that chiropractor. Those bills were incurred before I ever got in the case. But the chiropractor was aware that there was an accident.
Did she have benefits? Was some insurance company or something paying benefits?
I think she had like $5,000 to $10,000 in medical payments coverage, Your Honor, under her own automobile policy, as I recall. But a lot of these expenses were unpaid. In fact, that's the explanation that she gave to the jury as to why she couldn't follow up on many of these other things. Some of the doctors would not take it on a lien, as they say, meaning that they wouldn't agree to wait until after the claim had been settled to get paid. They insisted on being paid right now. She had no insurance beyond the medical payments coverage, and therefore she couldn't get this medical expenses that she needed. Your Honor, in this case, the witnesses and the defense counsel, for all the expert witnesses testifying about the physical injuries, agreed, and defense counsel conceded in final argument that she was physically hurt in the accident, that they were accepting the testimony from the plaintiff's dentist that she had TMJ-like symptoms caused from a neck injury, and that her symptoms of headaches, visual symptoms, depression, were all from the physical complaints. And to quote defense counsel, those complaints were, everybody in the room agrees Ms. Costner has. Dr. Gibson, our expert, and Dr. Chang, the defense expert, agreed that she needed future medical care and she needed psychological counseling for the post-traumatic stress syndrome that she had gone through. Defense agreed that she hurt her neck, her upper back, and even the TMJ muscles. And defense counsel, as the court knows from reviewing the briefs, admitted during final argument and suggested to the jury that you should award her at least $21,000 for the medical care and treatment suggested by Dr. Gibson. And you should award her $6,000 to treat her for the TMJ. And should award her $6,000 for psychological care. And Your Honor, if I could point out, these numbers were after he had made a strenuous argument about the fact that the total medical expenses we were seeking were excessive. So what he in essence was saying was, after you mitigate the damages and bring down this large number, this is the number you should award. Give her $21,000 for medical care, $6,000 for TMJ, and $6,500 for psychological impairment. The last point I want to address very briefly is that the $21,000 award, I'm sorry, the $16,000 award for physical impairment is illogical and fatally inconsistent when you consider the zeros they gave for economic and non-economic damages. If the lady had physical impairment of $16,000, that necessarily means that she had some type of physical injury. And coupled with all the other evidence in the case, it makes it quite clear that even the jury knew she was physically hurt in the accident and that she must have suffered some pain and suffering, as agreed to even by the defense expert, and that she was entitled to some amount for medical care.
Inconsistent verdicts, though, is not an appropriate argument in this matter, is it?
Well, I think it is, in the sense that it reflects the jury's rather arbitrary treatment of the evidence in this case, Your Honor. I can't figure out any explanation for how they could award $16,000 for physical impairment, and then on the other hand say she has no non-economic damages, no pain and suffering, no inconvenience, none of those things, and no economic damages, not even a dollar for medical care, and still come up with $16,000 for physical impairment. I've struggled to try to figure out a way that can be justified.
And I really, you want to reserve time?
Yes, I better quit, John.
Okay.
Matt Biskin, 15701 for Grand Junction Concrete Pipe and Mr. Manzanares. The jury's verdict in this case is explained by at least two potential theories, which means the jury's verdict should be upheld. The first theory, of course, is the jury simply did not believe the plaintiff's case on economic and non-economic damages. Whatever spin one wants to put on the lengthy and large amount of evidence that was put into the record of this case, the damages were hard fought. To correct some of the representations made regarding the evidence, in fact, none of the defense experts conceded vision problems. In fact, the only neuro-ophthalmologist to testify was the defense expert, Dr. Wilson, who said there was absolutely nothing wrong with the plaintiff's eyes. Counsel for plaintiff on closing conceded that the defense theory was, well, the EMT said there was nothing wrong with her, and the state trooper said there was nothing wrong with her, and therefore, ladies and gentlemen, the defense would like you to believe that there was nothing wrong with her. The evidence in the record runs the gamut from...
The response to that was, everyone in the room knows she was injured.
Everyone in the room knows she was injured. That's correct.
And didn't you say, you know, 21, 27,000 would have been appropriate?
I said the upper limit would be 20, would be $36,000 is exactly the right number.
Did you suggest she'd be entitled, she should be entitled to no damages for economic and non-economic damages?
I think that the evidence would suggest that she would be not entitled to any of those on one of two theories. The jury didn't believe the case.
But did you argue, was that argued to the jury, or was it simply an acknowledgement on your part that she would be entitled to damages in those two categories, but only in much smaller amounts, as you suggested?
I think in context, the argument was, if you're going to give her damages, you should give her $36,000 and not the $2 million she's asking for. The alternative argument, of course, which was also made, was she didn't mitigate. Dr. Chang's testimony wasn't exactly as characterized up here a few minutes ago. Dr. Chang's testimony was she hasn't received the right care, and that a good chunk of the care she needs is to fix the bad chiropractic care and the bad traumatic brain injury suggestion that she has received in the course of her litigation strategy. So clearly the jury could have said, there's a dispute here. She's not hurt. I think this verdict is perfectly explained by the proposition that either the jury did not believe the medical care she put on as evidence, but understood that she had some soft tissue injuries. I mean, she complained, there's no question, she complained of a sore shoulder and a sore thumb at the scene of the accident. But she also got up and walked away and drove to Ohio and did a bit on the job that afternoon. There's lots of evidence in the record across the board here, all the way from relatively minor injuries, certainly de minimis injuries in the record, all the way to plaintiff's argument that she's profoundly brain damaged. The other thing that I think the jury could take into consideration when instructed that they're entitled to disregard anybody's evidence if they don't believe them is the fact that not only the defense experts, but the plaintiff's own doctors said she was exaggerating her symptoms. This is evidence that was before the jury, and this is a classic case of the jury saying she's overreaching. We don't believe her. That is the jury's job.
Why award the impairment damages?
The impairment damages, it seems to me, was an acknowledgement that she had pain and suffering and probably was sore for a couple of weeks.
If she had pain and suffering, why isn't that being awarded as non-economic damages?
Because she failed to mitigate it. Dr. Chang's testimony was that instead of suffering for a few weeks, she suffered for 5 years because she continued to go to this incompetent and, in my view, unethical chiropractor in the face.
But if the 3 weeks were reasonable, wouldn't she be entitled to compensation for that period?
Not if it's offset by the failure to mitigate. I mean, the jury is told you must reduce an award by any amount you find she incurred because of her failure to mitigate. If you take $118,000 and another $18,000 of patently silly therapy and reduce the award, you get nothing.
Well, I'm just positing this. If she had 3 weeks of treatment that was appropriate and necessary, the failure to mitigate can't make that go away, can it? Simply that all the rest of the things might be unreasonable or unnecessary.
I think it can, and I think the evidence was that while Dr. Chang testified that some chiropractic was appropriate, only Dr. Lankering was of the opinion that his treatment was appropriate. The evidence that went before the jury was on questions of applied kinesiology and testing her liver and prescribing $75 to $150 of supplements a month. This was his treatment. Dr. Chang testified that whatever physical work he did probably hurt her shoulder. This is all on the record. And
didn't you say a minute ago that Dr. Chang testified that she never received the proper treatment? That maybe 2 or 3 weeks might have been appropriate, but she never received the proper treatment, even in those 2 or 3 weeks.
Dr. Chang's testimony was, here's what she needs if she needs anything, but she's never received this. And indeed, her own neurologist, Dr. Gibson, conceded that she had not received the treatment he recommended for her. So she never got any treatment that was going to deal with these damages.
Why isn't she entitled to the future damages if we assume that all the treatment was inappropriate and unnecessary, but it's conceded by the physicians who testify on both sides that she will have some future expenses for actual injuries she sustained as a result?
If she could prove her case, I suppose she would be. I put it to you that she didn't prove the case, and the jury was entitled to conclude that. The verdict is consistent under Steele versus Law. The verdict is appropriate under the evidence in the record. Let me try to be even more direct on this point. Counsel argued in closing, as I said, that if she had soreness, if she had some soft tissue injury as she walked away from the EMTs, that explains the physical impairment verdict. It simply isn't appropriate to shift the burden of proof to the defense on the question of the jury's findings regarding the plaintiff's damages. The question is, what is the evidence in the record? And the evidence in the record runs the gamut in this case, from de minimis injury to severe brain damage. And the suggestion that this wasn't all hard fought is just not supported in the record. I think that the real issue here is, can we conclude, as we have to, that there is clear and definite evidence of the jury acting arbitrarily? And there simply isn't, because of the vast record, thousands and thousands of pages of testimony, experts going back and forth against one another, and the bottom line, the ENT saying, I knew her before, she looked the same as she was before, she acted the same as before. The ENT, Ms. Costner saying, yeah, I knew them, I joked with them, I got up and walked away. That's the low end of things, and that's de minimis. The high end of things is she's severely and profoundly brain damaged. Jury didn't buy it. I think that if you look at the jury's discretion here, both in terms of considering the damages issue, considering the expert testimony, considering what counsel have to say, closing isn't evidence, it's an argument, it's an opinion. The jury can reject even uncontroverted evidence. That's the D.R. Horton versus Bischoff case. They don't have to listen to us. They can make these calls. Steele versus Law says that a zero economic, zero non-economic, and a $12,000 physical impairment verdict is just dandy.
What does Peterson versus Tadalini say about, hey, even if the evidence is undisputed, they don't have to listen to us?
If I remember correctly, I think that's exactly what it says.
I thought it said if the evidence is undisputed, there better be some damages.
But I don't think there's... Okay, but there's no undisputed evidence here.
Even as to a minimal level of injury?
No, not even as to a minimal level of injury. As I said, if the standard is de minimis, that is to say, I've got a sore thumb and a sore shoulder, that's de minimis. That's in the record of this case. If there's evidence in the record, coupled with the failure to mitigate, I think there's more than enough different theories to explain this verdict.
This is a low-speed impact case, is it not?
Depends on who you talk to. Yes, I contend it's a low-speed impact. There was no actual biomechanical evidence. But what was demonstrated in the record was the taillights on her car were not broken. The car didn't move. The damage was to a scrape along the side of her car and the fiberglass top around the truck was cracked. No taillights broken, no bumper broken. She didn't impact the steering wheel. She didn't impact the windshield. She wasn't knocked unconscious.
The bags deployed?
No airbags at all.
She didn't have them.
I don't think she had them. It was a pickup truck. So, she's up walking. The evidence in front of the jury was that she's up walking and talking to the state trooper. There's photographic evidence of her carrying on conversations that were described by both my client and the state trooper as unimpaired and in control, and she appropriately gave the information to the state trooper. And when she filled out the state trooper's form, it asked, were you injured? And she left it blank. There's plenty of evidence in the record here that she was not hurt. I have nothing further to say.
Your Honor, I would respectfully dispute Mr. Biskin's statements that Dr. Chang, their expert, said these injuries were de minimis. On page 4 and 5 of my brief, I cite to the record the exact places where Dr. Chang testified that plaintiff wasn't making this stuff up just to get money. These were real injuries that she suffered, including acute stress reaction, a shoulder injury, biceps tendon strain, biceps tendonitis, rotator cuff strain. All of these were supported by the MRI that was taken, cervical strain and neck pain, TMJ type dysfunction, left myogenic thoracic outlet syndrome, suspected post-traumatic vision syndrome, depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder. That's not from my expert, that's from their expert. Steele versus Law is a case that says that if you have discomfort, sort of like you rake leaves in the yard one day, and you wake up a little sore the next morning, that's what one of their experts in that case testified that her pain was like. That was de minimis. And that's what this case was based upon, the Steele case. But this is not a case where she had de minimis injuries, not when it was verified by their own defense doctor. This case falls under the Martinez versus Shepard standard and the Peterson case that the court mentioned a second ago. The physical injuries were real. They were not made up, even according to their expert. And even defense counsel conceded that in the final argument, that she wasn't making up all these injuries. They were painful injuries, as conceded by the defense expert. They lasted more than a few days. In fact, Dr. Chang testified in the record that they lasted for some 4 to 5 years, that she still was suffering from some of these vision problems and the shoulder problem that had not been addressed by an orthopedic surgeon. And the reasonable medical care was certainly not zero or de minimis. It was in the $20,000 to $30,000 range. And as much as defense counsel would like to explain away how they could find $16,000 for physical impairment, which clearly means that she had some physical injury, it's not explained by the mitigation or damages doctrine, because as we have contended, the mitigation or damages doctrine only reduces the damages that were avoidable. The $116,000 of unnecessary chiropractic care, or whatever the jury felt like was unnecessary. But that still leaves, as one of the judges has already pointed out, that still leaves a core of unavoidable injuries, unavoidable medical expenses. And that is what the jury should have at least awarded, even if they didn't accept anything else about brain injury or serious physical injuries. They should have at least awarded an amount equal to what all the experts agreed was necessary to treat this lady with reasonable and necessary medical care.
If the jury mistakenly put the $16,000 under physical impairment instead of under the other categories.
I thought about that, Judge, and I, you know, I kind of remember cases of you where there's just a general verdict blank for damages, and in that event, everybody's speculating about what the jury was thinking when they awarded that. But because of the caps put on the damages, you know, we're required to submit those in the three different blanks. And now we have a little bit of insight into what the jury's thinking or not thinking. And in this case, I think they clearly weren't thinking correctly. I think they misinterpreted the mitigation of damages defense to reduce the first two categories of damages to zero, but recognized, as shown by the $16,000, that she was physically impaired. But in any event, Your Honor, the findings are what they are, and that's what we have to live with.
Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.